This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Dov Charney, the CEO of American Apparel, a clothing company known for provocative ads and skin-tight clothing, is being sued for sexual harassment based in part on his habit of wearing his briefs around the office. He argues that since the company makes underwear, it's his job to try them out, and implied that it was just part of the sexually charged culture of his company. That's an extreme example, but lots of employees find themselves uncomfortable, whether that's from sexual banter, clothing, pictures, politics, jokes. We're not talking about illegal discrimination or harassment, but in situations where the office culture makes you uncomfortable, should you be expected to conform? What does it take to fit into the culture of your workplace? What happens when you don't? We want to hear today from bosses and employees. 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And let's start with a caller. Denise is on the line. Denise calling us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
It's so funny. About an hour ago, I got an email from our CEO, and from anyone else, it would have been spam, but it was basically an email that characterized anyone that opposed the war or the president as unpatriotic and un-American. And I just didn't know what to do about it. You know, it mystifies me how this could happen, and I don't know who to go to or what to say about it.
Is there any incident that prompted this?
No, it's actually about the third or fourth one, and I think he sent one that was a little less severe, and then people have been forwarding him other ones from what I can see from the string of emails, because he's basically forwarding other emails back out to us. And it's a company of 5,000 people. He's four states away from me. He's like the bigwig of our company. And they're just getting more and more harsh as far as...
And what's the talk around the office? Is it, can you believe what that idiot just sent? Or, hey, anybody, he's right.
I haven't heard a lot of he's right, but it could just be my office. So, probably this plays a little better in Texas where he's at. So
I see. And in any case, if you felt as if you... said something in opposition to the war that it might cost you your job?
I'm afraid to respond back and just ask him to stop because I would kind of be afraid that, you know, there might be some repercussion to that, but I can't say whether or not that would happen.
Denise, good luck.
No, thank you.
Appreciate the phone call.
Okay.
Joining us now is Tori Johnson, founder and CEO of Women for Hire and workplace contributor on ABC's Good Morning America. She's with us from our bureau in New York, and it's nice to have you today on Talk of the Nation.
Thanks for having me.
And Denise's situation, she's certainly not alone.
She is not alone. That's right. In a case like that, you know, definitely people can practice, but they shouldn't preach in the workplace. They can have their own beliefs that they're certainly entitled to. But when you are pushing those beliefs or preaching those beliefs onto other people, that's often where the discomfort in the culture comes along.
And that might be different if Denise was working at, say, the Republican Party headquarters.
That's right. That's right. And in a case like that, you know, she has some options. She can remove herself from the situation. She can reply directly to her boss, not reply all, but directly to him and say, I'm, you know, not somebody who appreciates receiving spam, or spam is very disruptive to my day. I would appreciate it if you took me off of your distribution list for these kinds of emails because I really rather focus on my work. You know, if you make it work focused, it's very difficult for the boss to take issue with that.
On the other hand, that promotion you'd been angling for might not be coming your way.
Well, it depends on how you handle it. I think in a case of if you say, you know what, I'd much rather focus on my work, as opposed to saying, I don't like the tone of your email, I don't like the content of your email, you know, sometimes doing that to the boss can cost you that promotion.
Yes, it certainly can. And these are, you know, some of these situations, and again, you know, to find pictures of barely clothed women in your office, well, a lot of people would say that's totally unacceptable. But again, maybe not if you work at Playboy.
That's correct. You definitely have to know the environment that you're in and know the culture that you're in. And in some cases, the way that people dress or the way that their cubicles are decorated is certainly part of the culture. There are other times, though, when I'll give you another example. There was a woman who not very long ago called me in tears for help because she had accepted a new position. And she's an Orthodox woman who observes Shabbat. And that meant getting home before sundown on Fridays. And her employer had no idea about her religion before they chose to hire her. And she certainly didn't mention it. And so her first week on the job, she announced that at a certain time on Friday, she had to leave because of her religion. And when she did that, everybody became resentful that she thought she could cut out early on Fridays while everybody else had to stay and work. And she noticed the following week, you know, people were not as friendly as they were the first week. She thought people were calling her a slacker. She was totally offended by it. And she wasn't really sure what she should do. And in that particular case, I told her, you know, don't be offended. There are a lot of people who don't necessarily know all of the religious traditions. They might not realize what you observe. It came out of left field to them. And instead, you should address it head on. And you should say, you know, this is my religion. This is what it calls for. But I just want you to know that perhaps it may seem as though I'm leaving early or working less than other people or not getting my work done. But I want you to know that on another day, I come in early or I stay later on another day.
Yeah, she could point out celestial mechanics and say, you know, come June, I'm staying late here.
That's right. Exactly. So I think it's all about, sometimes it's about educating people. Perhaps if, you know, everybody stays late and you're the only one who doesn't, that's an example where perhaps you don't necessarily feel like you fit into the culture, but that doesn't mean that you can't work there and you can't get along with your colleagues through some, you know, candid communication.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Shelley. Shelley with us from Missouri.
Hi.
Hi, Shelley. You're on the air.
Oh, thanks. Your topic is really timely because I just got an email this morning, and I frequently get them. I work at a college, and it's a very fundamentalist, traditional Protestant Christian community, and they just assume that everybody feels the same way, I guess. I get all kinds of prayer chain requests and help, you know, Jesus walk around the world through this email and all kinds of stuff like that, and these come from people at various levels in management.
And did you know this about the company before you started to work there?
Oh, I know it about the whole region, yeah.
So there's a, in terms of that kind of environment, you're suggesting you don't have a lot of options.
Well, I it's not something that I really enjoy getting on my work email. I kind of find it inappropriate regardless of the topic just because it's not work-related. But I would hesitate to say that because I think I would be interpreted as a Satanist or something, you know.
Mm-hmm. Tori Johnson, any advice for Shelley?
Sure. I wouldn't necessarily focus on the content. As opposed to saying, you know, I don't appreciate or agree with or support the content of the emails that you're sending, you know, oftentimes you can just reply to the sender and say, please remove me from your distribution list. I try to keep all of my emails focused on work. And, you know, sometimes people will take offense if anyone asks to be removed from a list, no matter what the list is about. And other times people will say, oh, she was polite in that. She, you know, didn't have anything critical to say, and they'll gladly remove you.
Yeah, thanks. It's always tricky to get off someone's email list and still maintain a friendship.
Yeah. Just don't sign it 666.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Right. Good luck, Shelley. Joining us now is Marty Nemko. He's a career coach and a contributing editor for careers at U.S. News and World Report. He's with us from member station KQED in San Francisco. And Marty, nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
My pleasure.
And with some other potential sources of cultural conflict in the workplace, we've talked about religion and politics. How do things like pace, age, type of humor, family situation, all those things can come into play?
They're huge. I mean, the biggest one where there's a mismatch that can really affect your quality of life is the amount of work expectation. Is the work expectation you're going to be working 70 hours a week and that, God forbid, you should go on to go home at 3 o'clock for your kid's soccer game, you're going to be viewed as a slacker? That's the biggest one. You know, some email distribution list from an insensitive, politically minded boss, you know, that you can kind of shrug off, but you can't shrug off 70-hour work weeks. You can't shrug off a workplace culture. Let's say it's everything is a meeting. Everything is a team, you know, and you are somebody who really likes, you know, give me my assignment and I'll do a great job. Don't make me go to all these meetings. Those are the kind of cultural differences that can be deal breakers for a person on the job.
Mm-hmm. Who sets the tone? Is it the boss?
Yeah. Usually, you know, it depends on how new the organization is. If it's a startup that's just got one round of venture funding, you know, it's usually the CEO who sets the tone. But if it's a long-standing organization, it's something that has kind of oozed through the fabric of the organization for 300 years. Sears has not become a conservative organization because of one person. It is embedded in the fabric of the culture.
And most of these places are very concerned about, making sure they don't alienate their employees.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things, you know, you talked at the top of the show about American Apparel. I mean, I think the guy's probably nuts, and it's the last place on earth that I'd want to be. But, you know, just as we celebrate ethnic diversity, I love the diversity of workplace cultures. If I am a conservative fundamentalist Christian, there are certainly, like the previous caller, there are places that will be comfortable for me to work. And I also, though, if I'm a flirty kind of person, male or female, doesn't matter my sexual orientation, if I want to work in which a place that isn't desexualized, where everybody's walking around in very loose clothing and no jokes can be made, I'd be sad that I couldn't have an American Apparel or, you mentioned, Playboy to go to. I love diversity of workplace culture.
And the key to this, and what Tori was saying as well, it sounds like preparation. Know what the culture is before you get into it.
Excellent question. And sometimes it's right in the brand. I mean, like you said, Playboy, you kind of know what to expect. But a lot of times you don't know. And there's a lot that you can do in the job interview to get a picture of what it's really like. So asking a question in the interview, and they always ask you, do you have any questions? And then you're left with kind of these stock questions like, what should I know about this job that you haven't already told me? Rather say, you know, have any people left your organization because of a mismatch with the organizational culture? That will tell you a lot. Now, they may or may not be honest with you, but questions like that can unearth the corporate culture in advance, so you don't have that Hobson's choice of should I deal with this, confront it, or leave.
Mm-hmm. Tori, is that a good question, do you think, to ask at a job interview?
Absolutely it is. I also think, you know, taking a tour. Many times when we go on interviews, it's, you know, we're ushered into someone's office and then ushered out. You know, ask, hey, can you give me a tour around? If you're somebody who's not working and you have a little more flexibility to be able to offer, you know, a trial period, can I spend a day here with this department that I might be working for? Can I talk to some of the people who might be my colleagues? You know, sometimes that's not appropriate and you're not going to be able to do it, or it's not applicable. Other times it is. But certainly, you know, there's a situation I'm reminded of not very long ago, a woman who I had said to her, you know, make sure that you ask these questions in advance, make sure you really know what you're getting into. And she said to the prospective boss, you know, what could someone do to really tick you off? And he said, leave before 7 p.m. And she knew it was not going to be the right place for her because she had to get home to her kids.
Every workplace has its idiosyncrasies. Whole sitcoms have been built on these office mini cultures. But how much should you be expected to fit in to your workplace if it makes you uncomfortable? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Every office is different. If you work in fashion, you might be expected to wear fashion-forward apparel. If you work at a men's magazine, you're probably likely to see not a whole lot of apparel at all. But what happens if the peculiar culture of your work environment makes you uncomfortable or offends you? Our guests are Tori Johnson, workplace contributor on ABC's Good Morning America, and career coach Marty Nemko, who's also a contributor to U.S. News and World Report. And, of course, we want to hear from you. Is your workplace culture your responsibility or the responsibility of your office to help you feel comfortable? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also check out our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And let's get Steve on the line. Steve with us from St. Louis in Missouri.
Hi. I'm in my mid-20s, and in several of my past jobs, I've had the opportunity to work with people who are fairly older than me, I'd say in their 30s or 40s. And one of the things that I've noticed is that I try to just pay attention to the language that I use at work, and I certainly don't take offense to whenever people, you know, slip the occasional four-letter word, and I never point that out, but I rarely do that in the office place. And I found that in one of my past jobs in particular, that some of the people there, I guess, would get a little uneasy when talking around me because they just noticed that I never, would swear in the workplace. And so I wanted to know, I certainly don't want to, in the future, if I'm in a situation like that, try to change people's habits, but what could I do to kind of diffuse that situation?
Steve, where do you work, on a windjammer?
Oh, no, no, no. I've worked in the IT field in the past, and right now I'm just going into a professional environment.
And so that's they swear like troopers in those professions. I didn't know. Tori Johnson, any ideas?
Sure. I mean, you know, oftentimes it's how you react by, you know, not speaking that way, I think sometimes sends a signal. You know, if you're somebody who, you know, doesn't respond back with those four-letter words, oftentimes people realize like, oh, you know, he's the guy who, you know, we should, you know, watch ourselves around. And that's okay. And there's no reason why you should start swearing because other people do. I think in that particular case, you know, being yourself often sends a cue without needing to tell people, hey, watch your language around me.
You know, I'm wondering, sometimes when we make an explanation, we make a causal explanation, we say, they're not liking me because I'm not using four-letter words. That doesn't quite pass the smell test. I'd invite you to look inward a little bit and ask yourself, is there something else other than your lack of use of four-letter words that are turning them off to you? Really, are your comments very substantive? Are you intimidating? Are you too shy? Do you not have a good sense of humor? So I would look beyond that very obvious thing and see if maybe there's something else going on.
Thank you. I wouldn't consider myself an uptight person, but I just, you know, it's kind of one of those reactions that I just never expected to see. So thank you.
Good luck, Steve. Let's see if we can talk with Chad. Chad in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Yes. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Okay. I actually used to work for a manufacturer of medication used for erectile dysfunction.
Ah, Viagra or one of those?
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to, you know, get too specific, I guess, but... I recall when I first got hired, you don't necessarily know which group of products you're going to be grouped into working directly with until after you're hired. So you can't do a ton of research on it, although I didn't really have a problem with working with an erectile dysfunction medication. I noticed that while going through the months of training that you learn about the products and how they work and all of that, there's a lot of women and men, you know, grouped together, and the women particularly were really, really shy and reserved about it. And you know, if you walked into the conference room at the right time, it would really seem like sexual harassment based on the discussions that are going on and the terminology that's being used. And
well, was this clinical terminology?
Yes, but it's also sexual behavior in general.
Because the guys couldn't help themselves but make jokes about it.
Right. I mean, there was a lot of joking around going on, and women in general were a little more reserved as far as using, you know, discussing it at all. They would kind of sit back and not really contribute much to the conversation, which on a certain level, you know, was kind of interesting because you need to have a certain level of maturity to be able to discuss it professionally. But at the same time, maybe the men went the other way and were joking around about it and were a little too familiar with it and loose about the terminology. That it created a really weird dynamic.
Yeah, and Marty Nemko, you would think that after a while the men would notice that the women were being made uncomfortable.
And as well they should. Of course, being aware to unspoken, nonverbal vibes are very important to success, whether it's in a sexualized context or not. The successful employee is listening to not only what people say, but what they don't say, is trying. And if you're a manager, it is critical to try to help people flower. That can mean adjusting so that there isn't one organizational culture. But you don't, you know, to treat everybody equally is not the same as treating everybody fairly. The goal of every manager is to treat everybody differently. And if somebody loves bantering and sexual jokes and it doesn't impact their workplace, and in fact, makes them more productive and happier and less likely to leave, that's a great manager. The great manager also recognizes that some church mouse who is very, very uncomfortable that should not have that kind of thing going on. One size does not fit all.
Chad, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Here's an email we have from Liz in Hercules, California. What people wear is the biggest giveaway of what the company culture is, and that would be the question in interview, in my opinion, what's expected in attire. Tori Johnson?
Sure, and I think that's a perfect question. You can certainly ask it. You know, tell me about the dress code here. You can certainly see it, part of it yourself by visiting a company's headquarters, but asking the question outright, even before an interview, but if not, certainly during an interview. Can you tell me about the dress code? What's expected? What will I find here?
Let's see if we can go now to Jerry. Jerry's with us from Cleveland in Ohio.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
There's a question that I like to ask when I'm on job interviews, and I try to make it near the end. My question is, why should I work for you?
Because there'll be a check every 2 weeks.
I really like that.
Turning around the what do you bring to us?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And I do it not just to get an answer, but to see how they react to the answer.
Marty Nemko, why do you like that question?
I like that because a job interview should not be an interrogation. It should be a kind of a first date where both of you are trying to check out whether you're right for each other and whether you should go steady. And I think that is very empowering of the worker and an appropriate empowering of the worker. Those kind of questions suffused through the interviews convey both confidence as well as you're going to get a better sense of whether you're going to fit there. I think that's terrific.
I would also say in that particular case that an employer should welcome a question like that. I mean, the savviest of companies want to make sure that they're making the right choice and that right choice has to be mutual, and that helps get to that issue.
Well, I've never gotten a bad reaction to it, but they're usually surprised.
I'd be impressed.
I hope so.
Jerry, good luck with the next time you ask that question.
Which will be soon, I hope. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. Kent with us from Sacramento in California.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to make the comment. I work for an educational institute, and they have a policy prohibiting the exposure of tattoos and facial piercings and that kind of stuff. And they actually try to employ individuals from about 18 to 25. And with how common tattoos and piercings are, I was a little surprised that they have a prohibition against having them exposed.
But as long as that's up front, do you think, Tori Johnson, is anything wrong with that?
I don't think there's anything wrong with it if that's the culture and that's the expectation and it's spelled out. I have a problem with it when it's, you know, not spelled out and so that somebody starts a job and then discovers it. I think it's important for employers to be clear about what the rules and expectations are from the get-go. And if that's an image that they want to portray, and it's very possible that they're trying to put forth an image where such, you know, piercings or tattoos they feel would compete with their image or conflict with their image, then, you know, I don't have an issue with it.
Mm-hmm. And Kent, it's from what you're saying, it was made clear before you started.
It was made clear when I was in the interview. They do hire people with tattoos on their necks and arms and stuff like that. And in those cases, those people are required to cover them. And the covering seemed to draw more attention to the fact that they have tattoos than actually having the tattoo exposed. People are required to wear armbands or socks that have been cut or bandages or scarves even, you know, in warm months. And working with kids notice that sort of thing, and they immediately ask questions about it. Whereas if you had a tattoo, they would comment about it once or twice and then leave it alone rather than continue to ask you, what is it there for? Why do you have that there? Why can't you show us what's underneath?
Mm. So you may disagree with the policy, but nevertheless, you have to go along with it.
Exactly. And I'm pretty fortunate. I have several tattoos. They're all easily concealed, and it hasn't been a personal problem. But several employees and friends that I work with have had to go to kind of extraordinary lengths to make sure that they kind of fit the mold that the business has kind of put forward.
Okay, Kent, good luck. And be cautious next time you get a tattoo.
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Let's go now to Leslie. Leslie's with us in West Broomfield, Michigan.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
How do you deal with a remark that is so blatantly offensive it's off the wall? And what I mean was I started a job. I eventually got fired, but this woman, as it turned out, had a habit of saying, shall we say, obnoxious things. On the second day of my employment, in the course of a conversation, she came up with the zinger, well, you know, as bad as Hitler was, he really did good things for Germany.
Really?
Yeah, I swear to God. I have, you know, when a lot of people ask why I don't work there still, that's one of the reasons I cite. A lot of people go, I understand. And, you know, I'm about to start a new job, but how do you deal with something that is so blatantly offensive and so totally floors you that you don't know what to say?
And you're certainly not going to ask your, you know, in the job interview, your opinion of Adolf Hitler. Marty Nemko, what do you do in
that?
What would Leslie do in that sort of situation?
You know, I think we as a nation have, and I'm a Jewish guy who's the child of Holocaust survivors, and of course I find that statement offensive. However, I think if we collectively listen to the kinds of complaints that are making people quit their jobs and file suits and I'm wondering if we haven't, in our effort to become a more sensitive society, have created such hypersensitivity that we have created a too uptight workplace. I think that decisions whether to leave a job or stay at a job should, you know, if for you as an individual you feel that that statement was enough to leave, of course, that's an intimate personal decision. I respect it. But I think all of us might be wise to use a more multivariate approach to weigh that obviously obnoxious and offensive statement against how short is the commute? How good is the product that the company makes? Are they ethical otherwise? What are your coworkers? Are there opportunities to learn? I think rather than use a reflexive reaction which forces us to be irrational, let us view the nature and the extent of the iniquity against the overall job picture and then choose what is right for you, for your family, and maybe even for society.
Tori Johnson, do you agree?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, it's up to each of us to not allow one person's comments or even one person to carry such excessive clout in how we pursue our careers or how we choose to decide to stay or leave a job.
Can I throw a little more into this mix?
If you keep it short.
It turned out to be that this woman was my manager.
Ah, well, nevertheless, it's just one person.
It just totally floored me.
Yeah, I can understand that. Leslie, good luck.
Thank you.
Appreciate the phone call. We're talking with Marty Nemko and with Tori Johnson about workplace culture and how difficult it is sometimes to fit in. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email from Philip in Bayshore, New York. The office would close an hour early on Fridays in the summer. I was told to go to happy hour at the local bar. If I didn't, I'd have to work the extra hour, which is what I did. I worked the extra hour. Next Monday, I was put under great pressure to go. It made things very awkward for a long time until I made a stand and refused. Since then, I left and started my own business. This clearly felt like a sort of harassment. And Tori Johnson, is that an appropriate reaction?
Well, first, I don't necessarily think that you have to go to happy hour and drink. You can go to happy hour and have a Coke. You can go to happy hour to be able to be with your colleagues, to be with your coworkers, if that's what, you know, team building and relationship building is all about. Do I think that someone should be forced to do that? No, I don't think that somebody should be forced to participate in a happy hour. And penalizing somebody because they didn't participate in a happy hour certainly doesn't sound like a great practice either. But sometimes, again, I think that, you know, we have to use a little judgment there to decide, you know, perhaps going to happy hour doesn't mean that they're trying to, you know, make me get drunk.
And the pressure thing, though, Marty Nemko, can be pretty ferocious.
Absolutely. Sometimes the pressures are not for things as overt as like happy hour, but it's more likely to be pressures to, for example, whenever you're going to make a decision to call a meeting and get everybody's buy-in and consensus, even though in your heart of hearts you believe it's a terrible waste of time. And I think those are the things that more commonly across the nation's workplaces are more likely to drive people crazy. And I'll be honest, if I were in a workplace where I was not allowed to make autonomous decisions and had to, everything was decision-making by consensus, and therefore the decisions were going to be likely reduced to the lowest common denominator, that would be a reason for me to quit. There is a lot of pressure, no question at times, for things like that especially.
Richard joins us. Richard calling from Meriden in Connecticut.
Hi.
Hi.
I'd like to give a pragmatic analogy. People buy a house. After they buy the house, they find out, the power lines are coming through here, or the highway's coming through here, or the neighbor has dogs or fixes his car or they're loud and everything. And you call a lawyer. What does a lawyer say? Move. That's the simplest thing. You can't do much about it. Same thing with a job. I've worked for foreigners where they're very dictatorial. They yell, they holler, they scream. My daughter worked for a Japanese company where it was male-dominated and they stayed till 10 o'clock at night. And it was inappropriate for a woman to lead a man into the next room. And then there's graffiti. All around, we don't go and sue the state or the city because there's offensive graffiti. This is just things you have to put up with.
Things you know, just... I'd like to... Go ahead, Marty.
Yeah, I'd like to offer a little suggestion that it kind of is a it builds actually on something that Tori said earlier. You know, Tori suggested that in advance, to try to get a better sense of things, try to get the boss to give you a tour around. Well, in front of the boss, the employees are not going to be candid about what's really going on. What I would recommend is, after you're offered the job, say, I'm delighted to be offered the job, and before we sit down to discuss terms, would you mind if I visited my workplace to just get a little feel for what it's like? Then you go unescorted, and you kind of watch the vibes. Are people happy? What if somebody does have a tattoo? Are they seeming to be ostracized? Hang around in the break room and say, you know, what might I know about this organization, what it's like to work here, that might not appear in the mission statement? Doing that, you may not get all the straight answers, but I think that little bit of investigative work can avoid a lot of pain later.
Marty Nemko, also with us, Tori Johnson. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Coming up, we're also going to talk about the 42nd Super Bowl, which is right around the corner. If you're planning to have people over for nachos and beer for the big game, there might be one thing keeping you up at night. Is your TV big enough? I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. In just a few minutes, we'll be talking about TV envy. Is yours big enough to host a Super Bowl party? But right now, we're continuing our conversation with Tori Johnson, the founder and CEO of Women for Hire and workplace contributor for ABC's Good Morning America, and with Marty Nemko, a career coach in San Francisco Bay Area and a contributing editor for careers at U.S. News and World Report, about workplace culture and how difficult it is sometimes to fit in. Let's see if we can get another caller on, and this is Lois. Lois with us from Traverse City in Michigan.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to comment, first of all, I'm 76, grew up in the 50s as a young housewife, and so in my midlife became a feminist and then went out and became the first woman in three different jobs. And I had some good advice from a former coworker who had worked in the integration movement, and she said, it supports what one of your people said on the show, she said, be careful that when you go out, in this case as a woman, but she had worked with on the integration movement, that you don't assume that it's a problem because of the prejudice, because you don't have a chance to correct anything for yourself. And the difference between when I worked on the line and as a technician after going back and getting a two-year degree was very interesting in the culture. But I had also the opportunity of, with my father being a working-class father, it wasn't always good when he babysat me at the bar and some of the stuff he brought home from work, but it prepared me for going into that kind of culture.
So were you tested, do you think, by some of your fellow workers?
Oh, yes. In the one case, two cases, in one case where I was looking in working in a lab, a younger man, probably in his 20s, did not speak to me for weeks. He just refused to speak to me. He was sitting next to me at his own test stand. At another work job, one of the gentlemen did not for a long while. He was unhappy. But I also had very good trainers who were very nice. But I did have to decide, both, in fact, I used to make presentations, and I would say, try to know where you are with your sexuality. And one of the things I regret is there were a couple of times I didn't draw the line closer, tighter. And but the thing is, in terms
of... So you let people get away with things they shouldn't have gotten away with.
In conversation. But I did with my trainer one time when I was at Chevy Engineering, and because I had been, shall we say, accepting, and he came over and said something about, you know, some of the guys wanted to know if I would want to go to a party. And I looked at him, and I had become wise enough that I looked at him and I said, am I being invited as a guest or part of the entertainment? And he never said anything more. Nothing else was said to me.
One party you were probably better off missing.
Oh, yes, definitely.
I suspect. And Marty Nemko, difficult, as we've heard, fitting in all kinds of places, but as a pioneer, as the first, that must be really bad.
Absolutely. I mean, it's great that, you know, when you hear a story like that from a 76-year-old, you're less likely to hear it of a 30-year-old, although I'm sure we can always, you know, dig deep and find some still examples of unbelievable Neanderthal behavior. But I certainly celebrate the fact that both men and women and people of all sexual orientation should have the right to be able to do their work in the workplace, and it's terrific that we've changed in that regard. You know, one thing I'd want to make sure that we cover that is very important about workplace culture that we haven't discussed at all is feedback. Some people can go day in and day out and not worry whether they get feedback or not, yet other people live and die for getting praise when they deserve it, constructive feedback when they need it. So one of the things that I encourage people to look for when they're looking for a job is this a culture where you are going to get feedback and therefore can grow and not be worried that you're doing a lousy job or not?
Yeah, and Tori, as you were talking earlier, that's just as important as if, you know, am I a team player or am I, you know, going to be given a project on my own to do and whatever fits your personality. Those things are important to know.
Sure. Whether you're the one who's giving the feedback or getting the feedback, it should be a regular part of the dialogue.
I don't know if I'm still on, but may I share one other thing?
Go ahead, Lois.
Okay. When I was working at Chevenier Engineering, there was a young man, Chinese or Taiwan. He didn't work in our department. I didn't know him. But there were I was white, and so even though the guys weren't real happy, I was still part of the whiteness, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So there were the comments being made about this fellow, and so I tried to figure out how I could, because they had learned I had kind of a short chain, and they liked to tease me, and I thought that's not a good technique if I get really offensive and high horse about it. So I finally learned this fellow's name, which was not easy for me to say. And so whenever they started talking about him, I'd say, oh, you mean so-and-so. And somehow or other, the climate changed without me being self-righteous or that. I never knew whether they thought it was because I knew him, because I knew his name, but it was just one of those rare opportunities where I had a little bit of wisdom, and it did change the whole climate.
I bet you have more than just a little bit of wisdom, Lois.
Well, my kids don't think so, but thank you. Thank you so much.
And thanks so much for the call. And Tori Johnson, as we wind this up, what she was just talking about, bringing about change, that can be really important.
It can be really important. And, you know, aside from Lois is reminding me of sort of the male versus female conflict, another that I see a lot today revolves around working parents versus their colleagues without kids, a real source of cultural conflict in the workplace right now. And there are so many examples of where, you know, that working parent thinks, and I'm one of them, that, I'm able to leave at this time because I got to go tend to my kids, and sort of, you know, in some ways can be very dismissive of the people without kids, that assuming that because you don't have a child to get home to cook dinner for or read bedtime stories to, that your time is somehow less valuable. Or that person can afford to stay later. And it's an area where there should be some sensitivity. And with so many companies tending to, you know, really promote their efforts to attract and retain working parents, and some people would call coddling working parents, it's an area where, you know, there should be some sensitivities.
Tori Johnson, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Tori Johnson, founder and CEO of Women for Hire. You can visit her website at www.womenforhire.com. With us today from our bureau in New York. And Marty Nemko, a career coach and host of the radio show Work with Marty Nemko on KALW. You can get more career advice at his website, martynemko.com. With us today from our member station in San Francisco, KQED. Marty, thanks so much.
It was my pleasure. Great segment.
And when we come back, we're going to be talking about, well, television envy.